also from MudhouseMedia.com. Join Patrick McEnroe as he has conversations with incredible guests on his tennis podcast, Holding Court. Share his love of tennis, the tournaments, events, and news with other professional athletes, artists, Hollywood stars, and CEOs. Exclusively on the Mudhouse Media Network and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tanya's Table. On this week's episode, I'm speaking with R&B vocalist Guapale. Thank you for being here and for agreeing to be on my podcast. How are you?
Of course. I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm doing well, considering. Are you in L.A.?
Right. I live there now, but I'm actually visiting family in Northern California right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm in
we
Oakland.
We had to break up this whole quarantine, stay home with, like, at least, you know, seeing some family and quarantining with them.
Of course. It's got to be so hard, yeah. Especially when you have children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what... Yeah. What has come to light for you during this period? I'm sure a lot, but what stands out?
I think, you know, constantly trying to focus on what I'm thankful for and what I'm grateful for instead of freaking out. I have been, you know, I feel like even though mentally it's a lot, you know, to try and grasp, you know, that we're in the middle of a pandemic and it's like an intense and inspiring time. I think that we're in the middle of some real shifts, you know, and a movement where there's actually more equality. I think that's going to come out of this and we'll be better on the other side. I've been taking a lot of quiet time just to stay peaceful and grounded and trying to direct my energy towards being creative. I've been recording an album from home. And that's been really good for me. And also just doing a lot of visioning of, like, what's the next steps? What are the next things that I want to invite into my life and kind of, you know, expanding on social media and collaborating, you know, with people and just staying creative.
That's wonderful. I feel you on so much of that. I feel that even though there's so many challenges, this period has been a gift to a certain extent, you know, to kind of reset. And the changes are coming. It has to,
yeah.
You know?
And we needed it.
Oh, my God.
We needed it. It's just like none of us could have ever imagined that we'd have to come to a standstill to, you know, start to reset and bring it on, I think.
That's right. I know. It's wonderful. And you've always, you know, tackled social and political themes, you know, in many of your songs. Are you bringing that into this new album that you're recording?
Yeah. I think a lot of what I'm working on right now is more introspective. I just recorded a song that was a collaboration with some folks at Spirit House, which is based in Oakland and a, you know, like a music creative space.
Someone just told me about that place. Yeah, where is it in Oakland?
Yeah, there used to be the kind of West Oakland that was like weekly jam sessions and visual artists also. And so we just did a song talking about the pandemic and what time we're in, but also talking about people being displaced and gentrification, because that's been a huge issue, really all over, like every metropolitan city, I think, in the world. And I've witnessed it all over the U.S., but, you know, in Oakland, it's been a big issue for a long time. And so tackling that, and that song is called Wonder. And then I think the songs, I always try and approach my songwriting, even if it's touching on different social issues, like I try and come at it from a personal perspective. And yeah, so I feel like a lot of these songs are just what's going on and in my mind, and trying to process what's going on in the world.
I know.
And love and every phase of that, which I feel like, you know, is kind of on every album also.
We need more of that. And I'm sure when they release songs and release, they'll inspire a lot of people. It must be very therapeutic, too.
Yeah. I mean, for me, songwriting is, you know, having a creative outlet for sure is therapeutic, because I'm getting to process things. And sometimes it comes out clearer in lyrics even than I could say it.
That's amazing. What a gift. Have you been writing and performing your whole life? Like since you were young, or when?
Pretty much. I mean, ever since I can remember as a kid, I've just loved music and the arts, period. So I always sang and I would dance, you know, like to entertain my family, and I'd draw pictures, and I would cook, and that was just like, those things have always been fun and entertaining outlets for me. And I would say, when did I start writing my own songs? Would probably be in college as a young adult.
And where was that? Were you in the Bay still?
That was Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Oh, that's right. I did read that. You know, I lived in Boston for a while down the street. Yeah, I lived down the street.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, in the mid-90s and the late 90s. When were you? Yeah.
Yeah, we were probably there around the same time, because I was there around the late 90s.
Down the street from Bob the Chef's. Did you find that place? And Wally's? Do you remember Wally's?
Wally, yes. I used to go to Wally's.
The little, they had some,
for
you know,
sure.
Performers.
I used to go to Wally's. Yeah. They had the best musicians.
Exactly.
I mean, definitely like all the top musicians from Berklee were there. And I felt like anybody that was touring with anybody and would come through Boston would come to Wally's. And it was just a hole in the wall. I mean, it was amazing.
Great vibe, though.
Yeah,
I wrote
some of my first songs with a lot of those musicians that I met there, actually.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I had some friends that went to Berklee as well. So it's a great school. So, we'll have to swap names at some point. So cooking is another way. You said you find it very therapeutic. Tell me about your history with food and cooking. You know, is it coming directly from the family, or living in the Bay, or?
And cooking has also been a way that I've been getting through this quarantine. And just like having the time, because I'm not spending a lot of time, you know, driving around and, you know, traveling or any of that. It's like there's time to cook three meals a day most of the time.
Right. And it takes time.
Yeah. Because I feel like, totally, because I feel like that's a balance for me when my life is extremely busy. It's harder to dedicate the time to slow cooked meals every day. But that's been a way, that's been part of my joy, I think, through these past months.
So tell me about this lamb.
With my daughter, she's more into it.
this lamb dish you posted. How old's your daughter?
My daughter just turned 13.
Oh, wow.
In May.
That's a good age to learn to cook.
Yeah.
Tell me about this lamb dish.
She's doing more on her own. So I grew up eating a lot of lamb.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's from South Africa, so I feel like lamb or goat is as popular as beef and chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's probably my favorite red meat. And I like making lamb chops with garlic and rosemary. Honestly, salt and pepper and olive oil. Like
that's
enough for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just sear it in and bake it, you know, high. And it's just like a delicious, savory, simple thing.
Well, you look like you got some skills there. I saw you, and you inspired me. I had lamb chops last night. I remembered. I was like, oh, you know what? I haven't had lamb in a while after watching your video. I was like, let me go get some.
Yeah, because I feel like people forget about it.
Oh, and it's so good. And you get, especially the chops are my favorite. I like legs sometimes.
Too, because they're tender.
Exactly. And I rubbed mine with some garlic and some thyme. And I put a little Dijon on it, Dijon mustard. That was a little trick I got from a chef that I used to work for in Boston, actually.
That sounds delicious.
Put it on the grill.
Because it probably gives it a little bite.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit of the acid in the mustard just kind of balances, you know, how the lamb, the fat on the lamb, you know, which gives it all the flavor when you're cooking it. It just, it's great. I love it. Mm. So
I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah.
The Dijon. I haven't done that before.
I like it. We used to do it and then add a breadcrumb crust. And so the Dijon kind of acts as the glue, but I didn't do it this time. I was like, I don't need the breadcrumbs right now.
Okay. Yeah. I know. It's a balance.
Right. So is there, I'm going to start asking you some, Tanya's table food questions. Is there a food that you could eat every day? Is there one thing that you just like,
honestly,
oh my God, I love?
I can't think of one thing I could eat every day because I feel like I'm a very, mood inspired person and I just get sick of doing the same.
Oh my God. And speaking of that, and you said that and it triggered the other common denominator I realize we have is we're both cancers. You're July 11th.
Yeah,
I'm July 14th.
I'm the same way.
I need variety.
I'm best friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm like, I wake up. It's like,
I really
what do I feel
do.
Like? Uh-huh. We are mood centric.
You want to feel inspired.
Yeah.
Each time, right? I mean, there's things that I love. I mean, I love chocolate cake, but I wouldn't even want to eat that every single day.
right. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I need for things to... I like being grounded, but I need for things not to be rigid.
That's
I can't be...
Same.
Like, it's too predictable or it's just not inspiring to me.
Same way. Yeah. That's so funny. When you said that, it just like, I'm like, oh my God, that's right. So there's not, okay, that's the answer to that question. is there anything you dislike about cooking? Like the prep or the dishes or?
I would say, okay, the after cooking cleanup is kind of annoying. I definitely like to have help with that. And I don't like mess. So it's hard for me to relax if it's just gonna sit there. So
right. I'm the same way.
I like it's nice when it's more of a like communal thing. You know what I mean? And we can work together.
Somebody does the dishes. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody
yeah.
Set the
I
table.
Love that. Or else I'm just gonna be exhausted.
I agree.
I don't mind the prep. I don't mind the prep, and I also don't mind help. With the prep, but that part's kind of fun for me.
Yeah,
especially if I'm not in a rush and I can get, you know, in a vibe and I can listen to music and just be in my zone, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the after can get a little overwhelming.
So you listen to music while you're cooking?
For sure.
Yeah, me too. I love that. Do you sing along mm-hmm. as well?
Sometimes, or dance along. And I think that's just another thing of like what mood I'm in
mm-hmm.
and what time of day it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if it's the morning, I might want something more mellow
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
listen to, so I can just kind of relax and take my time cooking. And then if it's, you know, I might want to listen to reggae if it's the middle of the day
mm-hmm.
or listen to Afrobeat or something, you know, if it's cooking at night or something, you know, just to be a little more festive. But I feel like it definitely helps. And I remember growing up, you know, we'd have a lot of unofficial gatherings at our house, and mm-hmm. the kitchen was like a gathering place, especially for the women.
Mm-hmm.
In the circle, it's just kind of like we gravitate towards them, and that's like, it's part of the party.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And just getting to hang out and do that together, and you know, music's in there and everything.
Yeah. So, did you learn to cook from your mother, or you mentioned the lamb was a dish that, you know, from your father's heritage?
From my father, mm-hmm. more so. Mm. I would do cooking projects with my mother, and I think especially when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
Both of my parents were really open with me experimenting.
Oh, wow.
I would, you know, it started just with, like, making any type of eggs, and it would be like all these kind of scrambles, and some of it was, I'm sure some of it tasted better than others, and you know, safe experimenting like salads, mm-hmm. but it would be, I'd put everything in there, you know, and then like shortbread cookies I could do on my own, and it was kind of a empowering thing for me.
Oh yeah.
That's
one of my favorites.
To, you know, we'd have, yeah, it was fun, and she would do like make samosas with me or make different things. But I think when it comes to a passion for cooking and mm-hmm. slow cooking and seasoning, I got more of that inspiration from my father,
mm.
who would, you know, he would take a long time in the kitchen, but it always tasted amazing.
Mm. I can,
yeah. And especially when it comes to, you know, seasoning meat, and he was like, what he made on the grill was amazing. He would do like, you know, marinate meat for hours and barbecue. And I didn't really grow up with barbecue sauce, but everything mm-hmm. was seasoned so much. I didn't really feel like
you don't need the sauce.
Need it. And I
exactly.
think,
it's a yeah. mask.
Oh my. Yeah.
For, it's a mask yeah. for poorly seasoned food, I think.
Yeah. It's like, it's fun to me sometimes as yeah. a condiment, but I really like seasoned meat
mm-hmm.
that doesn't have to be saucy.
Mm-hmm. Even when I had my barbecue spot, we had the sauce on the side, you know, because you don't, you shouldn't
eat
it. Oh,
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Is there an ingredient or a type of food that intimidates you? You were saying you're very experimental, but is there something you're like, ooh, I'm not going to mess with that?
Well, for me, I'm intimidated to barbecue.
Oh.
My comfort zone is the stove and baking
mm-hmm.
and stovetop,
mm-hmm.
You know, or all kind of fresh, raw things. But I'm intimidated to cook at the grill. And I think my dad was just such a good barbecuer.
Mm-hmm.
And then my man's a good barbecue. I'm just like, that's intimidating for me.
Let them have it, right?
yeah, yeah. But it's a goal of mine.
Yeah.
He used to make, my dad used to make these amazing barbecue beef ribs.
Mm.
And I never, it's been hard for me to get that taste anywhere, honestly. Well, and so I would love to make them one day.
Beef
but
ribs
I've been intimidated for years.
Yeah, they're hard to cook. You know, it's a real, those are a challenge. But
yeah,
they're tasty
when
you get them right.
Fry, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I wonder what the answer to this question is. If you weren't a singer, what would your career be? What would you do?
Well, I used to want to work with children. I used to think maybe I would be a teacher or a home child care provider.
Oh, wow.
And I used to volunteer, at like infant child care centers and pre-K child care centers. And my mom was involved with that. So it was probably, you know, something that she just kind of like had me assist with as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I always loved that. And then I used to want to own a cafe flower shop.
Oh, wow.
Which I still might do one day in life. You know, where there's
great
food,
yeah,
and flowers.
Totally.
And,
yeah. I love those.
Space.
Yeah, I love flowers. So I can totally see that. Well, that's interesting. I thought you were going to say chef because the way you've been talking about cooking, but cafe flower shop.
But see,
there you go.
Food would be able to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I always pictured that as part of it, but I feel like I would want it to be a little bit more of a shifting space rather than just restaurant, but
mm-hmm,
there would have to be good food there.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. All right. Looks like I might be having some competition. I'm just teasing. So is there a food that you didn't like as a kid that you love now? It doesn't sound like you were very picky eater, but I'm just curious.
I'm not a very picky eater.
Which is great.
As a kid, I felt like we were kind of forced to eat everything. It was just kind of like, if you're hungry, you're going to eat this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were things that, my mom would make oxtail soup sometimes, which
mm-hmm,
none of my friends were eating. But now I like it, you
mm-hmm
know.
Yeah.
It was a little different at our house. So I think that even where culinary arts are at now, I feel like everyone's exposed to more. And
mm-hmm,
so that's
for sure,
like,
for sure.
It's in vogue to use all kinds of spices from all over the world, but
right,
definitely growing up, you know, when my friends would come over, I'd be like, oh, can't we just eat something regular that everyone else is eating? And so it took me a little while to grow into, I think, just embracing all the spices. You know, by the time I was a teenager, I was like, okay, you know, I loved cooking and I was making my own, you know, chicken and potatoes with curry and cumin and
mm-hmm,
turmeric and everything. But yeah, my name and my eclectic background kind of took a minute to grow into.
I can imagine, but aren't you glad now that you have that? It's like, right? You
have
both.
I'm glad now.
Your parents knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
No, I mean, when I was little, Tanya was an exotic name in my neighborhood, you know, and I
really
and I would go to, and even traveling, we would go to national parks and they'd have all these little, you know, little fake license plates with your names on it, and there was never a Tanya.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there wasn't
a
Guapalé,
right?
Yeah. And I was like, wait,
no,
why can't I have a normal name?
I know. And that's the interesting thing. I feel like, you know, when I was little,
mm-hmm,
and people would just I'd say my name and people would keep like, what? I'd have to repeat it like 6 times. I thought, oh, when I grow up, I'm just going to change my name to a simple name.
Me too.
I think it's just
What were you going to call yourself? I wanted to be called Lisa.
I wanted to be like Chris or, you know, Victoria or something. And I don't know where I got that from.
That's so funny. But
I just wanted to blend in. Mm-hmm. And I think then, you know, as I got older, I was like, okay, it's okay to stand out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how society, you know, makes us, I guess, feel that way to a certain extent. You know, you don't want to be an individualist, mm-hmm. and then, mm-hmm. you know, but then later on you realize like it's a gift, and it's great to be an individual and to have your own identity.
Yeah. And I think that's been one of the beautiful things about this time, like mm-hmm. where, you know, racism is being exposed so much, equally with like, how can we empower each other and mm-hmm. how can people of color be more supported? It's like, if we're more out there and we see our reflection, then you don't feel so isolated mm-hmm. and so different. It's just because you're represented, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think, you know, in your career, then it's like, it's really a plus to stand out, because you have
right.
to be able to stand out and have your own voice to have any success and longevity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially as a creative, right? So mm-hmm. whether it's singing, mm-hmm. acting, being a musician, being a chef, it is kind of about that.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too, you know, I mean, I feel so grateful to my parents. It sounds like you do now, too, all the exposure as a young person to the variety of food, the variety of cultures. And you don't really, again, appreciate that till you're older. And then it's like, wow, that has really been a way that you have an advantage to move through the world, because you realize that we're more similar than different. And you mm-hmm. and you know that, you know, it doesn't matter, where you're from, really, or, you know, what the color of your skin is, or, you know, it's more about... just finding those common denominators that we share. And there's just more of them than not.
For sure.
I think.
For sure. There's always more that we have in common
mm-hmm.
than what separates us.
I agree. Now, what's something that you eat that you might not want anyone else to know, like your fans or your colleagues?
Like guilty pleasures. One of my comfort foods is still 25-cent ramen packets.
What? Ramen packets?
That's just like, yeah. Like, okay. Ramen, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Ramen soup. Uh-huh. And ramen soup now, you know, is like one of my daughter's favorite things. So she's used to going to, you know, ramen restaurants. And that just didn't exist when I was a kid. And I think it was just like on the off nights, you know, we'd eat ramen soup, but it would have all my mom was into being healthy. She was a Berkeley mom. And so she'd always like throw in vegetables and, you know, the egg that you whip real quick,
mm-hmm.
In the ramen. And I just never have gotten tired of ramen.
She doctored it up a bit.
She doctored it up a bit, but honestly, even just plain chicken ramen, or, you know, with the egg, maybe some chopped green onions on the top, still like kind of like if I knew those packets were more healthy, I would eat it even more often. But now, you know, that mm-hmm. I'm grown, I'm like, okay, I don't need to eat that often, but it hits the spot. You know, pepperoni pizza. But I also choose not to eat as much as I would want to.
Right. Yeah. But those ramen packets, they have that, like, just, it's almost, you can't replicate that little flavor, right? I remember my first year of college, all my friends were eating the ramen noodles. And I had some cooking skills.
The cup of noodles.
But now there's some high quality shops. And then there's also organic ramen noodle packages I discovered at the grocery store recently. Yes. So I don't know how they compare.
You know what? I don't like them as much.
Oh, really? Of course not.
I hate to say it. My brother can make ramen, and he'll do like a ramen that's like, you know, it takes 5 days, and he's like making a bone broth, and it's incredible.
Wow.
But I'm just not there yet with it. Yeah.
Namani, your brother.
Yeah.
Tell him I said hello. We met, gosh, it's been way over a decade ago when he was thinking of getting into the restaurant business. But I don't know if he's still doing that.
Oh, probably when he was. He's not anymore, but he was involved with Hibiscus.
Exactly.
When that first opened, I don't know why I just blanked on the name.
The New Parish. New Parish.
The New Parish.
Yes, exactly.
He was involved with that.
Yeah, I do remember that. Well, that's still around. And then Hibiscus, the chef Sarah, she moved down to Miss Ollie's. And she's still going strong. You know, we're all just kind of hanging in here right now through this period.
I know. See what happens. Are you guys just doing crazy to-go orders?
Yeah, we're doing takeout. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to get some outdoor seating together, hopefully whenever that's going to be permitted. But, you know, it's, again, it's that opportunity. You have to look at it and focus on, as you said earlier, what you're grateful for, what all the positives are. And for me, it's
What did we not have time for before? You might be like making some new secret recipes right now. That's going to be some special for when you get to fully open back up.
I might be. and making this podcast, which has been, you know, something I've been wanting to do. It's really fun to be able to talk to people about their, you know, their food experience. And as I said, for me, I just love finding those common denominators, you know, I think food and music are two things in life that just can really bring people together. So I appreciate
what you agree. Do. That's like, right? Thank you. That's like the recipe for a good party. It's just like good food and good music.
Absolutely. You have to,
and if you don't have one, you know, if people aren't going to be able to stay for a long time.
That's right. That's, chips can only go so far.
Exactly. Right. You got to have some real food and some real good music.
That's right. Well, when you're back in the Bay, you have to come into the restaurant. And I have I imagine you have heard of Meyer Sound. Have you heard of Meyer Sound? Berkeley-based company. I have their sound system in my restaurant. And it is a game changer. And the music, you know, just sounds great. So you have to come experience that.
I love that because I feel like sometimes music is an afterthought in restaurants.
It is for some
people. And I wish it wasn't.
Me too. I mean, I've gone to some places and, you know, it adds to the experience, you know, or it takes away from it.
Exactly. You want it to contribute to the vibe.
That's right. And it does. It makes a difference. I see it on my, my guests' faces, you know, when they hear a beat and they're, you know, chewing on their waffle. It's fun. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's part of the entertainment experience. And keeping it, for me, also keeping it in line with what is the vibe of the restaurant, what is the genre. So we play mostly R&B, and you know, during brunch I might, you know, play a little bit of gospel or a little bit of jazz. Dinner time, you know, we rev it up, but I just think it just adds so much to everybody's experience. So we have you in the rotation. Make no mistake.
Oh, I love it.
We certainly
do. I appreciate it.
We do. We use, you know, Spotify, and it's, you know, I hope that, you know, that it's true to supporting the artists, you know, with royalties and all that stuff, because that's important.
Really important. Spotify and Pandora and all that.
Yeah. Thank goodness that came around. So what is, I want to get back to a couple questions. I always want to know, what's your go-to condiment, like the one condiment you can't live without? Like, it's like, I got to put this on, you know.
I don't know.
Do you
if,
have one?
like, sometimes I don't know, is this considered a spice or a condiment or flavor or what? But I always want to have garlic, like access to fresh garlic, salt and pepper, and olive oil. And then I feel like from there, I can kind of steer to what exactly savory that we're making. You know what I mean? Is it going to more lean towards herbs or spices or, you know, more ginger? Or are we going more rosemary? Or are we going more, you know, whatever it is? But I feel like I always want to have fresh garlic and fresh black pepper. And
it makes all the difference.
Oil.
The fresh version, right?
Yeah. I love having, I feel like there always should be something fresh in there.
Absolutely.
And you can mix and match the rest.
Absolutely.
But
garlic. I worked for a chef who had in the bottom of each guest ticket, life is nothing without garlic. And I had to agree with him.
It's yes.
Just, yeah.
I love it. And when this quarantine started and I went to the grocery store, I couldn't find onions and garlic for a few days. And it, like they had just swept through it.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, every time I've gone since, I'm like, I got to keep extra all the time on deck.
Yeah. And luckily it's not one of those vegetables that, you know, goes bad fast. So you can.
Yeah, exactly.
It. Yeah. If you,
exactly.
If you,
what's your
store
go-to
correctly.
Condiment?
Well, you know, the one that it's Dijon, you know, I mentioned putting on the lamb. I mean, but then, you know, without garlic, it's nothing, but I love that sharp bite, and I feel like it's something that I can put on any kind of protein. I like it, you know, with beef on a burger, with chicken. I guess
totally even
not
like
so much
salmon.
With fish.
I've had some
salmon, right? That's the one fish, probably.
Yeah,
that
had a little bit of honey and a little bit of Dijon, and butter.
Yeah,
And I like Dijon a little bit in salad dressing too.
Oh, absolutely! No, it's I have it always in a salad dressing, absolutely. Unless I'm going for like an Asian flavor salad dressing, you know, where I have sesame oil and tamari or something. Wow. So let's talk hot sauce. We got to talk hot sauce because, you know, everybody's got their favorite. Do you have a favorite?
Yes. I would say my favorite for, like, especially for tacos and any kind of Mexican food or even Caribbean food, I like Chipotle.
Oh, so is that a brand or the Chipotle, the chili? You're talking about Chipotle chili.
Chipotle chili, but there's this brand, I cannot remember the name of it. I feel like they just sell it.
Yeah, Chipotles are great because they've got that smokiness, you know, they're smoked and they've got that bite. When I discovered those, that was kind of a game changer. I put them in my barbecue sauce that I make and a little bit in with mashed yams. It's really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like a nice round flavor. And then I don't know if this will be considered hot sauce, but I'll often have acha, which is like a hot pickled mango.
What's it called?
That is good. Acha.
Oh, okay.
I say acha. That's what.
How's it
that's
spelled?
What I grew up saying. It might really be achar.
Achar. I gotta look that up.
And it's like in if you go to Indian restaurants, sometimes they'll have pickled mango. But it's like hot, the one that's hot and spicy pickled mango that has like some chili oil in it. I feel like is good for Indian food, for South African food that often has a lot of curry flavoring, or even it tastes good, I feel like, with Jamaican food kind of.
Yeah, the mango, that makes sense. That Caribbean flavor. Wow. Now, have you spent any time in South Africa? Do you still have family there?
I still have family there. My father passed away a few years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry for that.
Most of that side of the family never moved from South Africa. Yeah, so every once in a while I'll go there and visit.
Oh, wow. That's been on my
really,
list for a while.
You know, growing up, yes. And I recently, you know, a lot of my family's more in Soweto and Pretoria and stuff like that, more near Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. But recently when I went, I also got to visit Cape Town, which is just so gorgeous and kind of, I would say, reminiscent of San Francisco.
Really? Oh, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get there one day.
The beautiful coast. Yeah.
And they have, I mean, the food, and there's a great wine scene in South Africa as well.
Yeah, they're
the
supposed
wines.
To have incredible wine. I have to say that I think it just depends on what kind of tier you're traveling at. I don't feel like South African food is the most exciting culinary arts.
Okay.
And I feel bad saying that, you know, because that's my culture, but it's just, you know, there's so many. I've always wanted to go to Thailand because the food is just like one of my favorites, or India or Japan, or, you know, even Jamaican food, or Morocco, you know,
that's so
Italy.
Yep.
I feel like there's certain places that are just like the food is like such an amazing attraction.
Mm-hmm.
But South Africa, I feel like, you know, the culture and the music, and it just has such a rich history. There's other things that will resonate even more than food. But the wine, I have heard, is amazing, especially in Cape Town.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I understand what you're saying. And I mean, you know, part of it could be the British influence. The British were not really known to be, you know, for their culinary ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's exceptions now. There's
exactly.
You know, there's places that have developed, and a lot of it from outside influence, like the East Indian people.
From immigrants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that is the beauty of, you know, travel and having a chance to discover those things firsthand. I mean, for me, it's really important. And, oh, yeah, Thailand. All my friends I have not been, who have been, have just raved about Thailand.
Yeah, I've been wanting to go for so long. And so that needs to happen soon after, you know, travel is opened up again. But just like the fragrances, and I love, you know, all the coconut milk and lemongrass and the lunch. It's just like so fragrant and flavorful, and I love the sweet and tart and spicy all mixed together.
Yep. No, they got it. And the ginger, it's like
so many fresh ingredients, right?
Yeah. I'll take it. I'll go there any moment. I went to Asia for the first time last year. I went to Singapore and Hong Kong, and it was just, you know, it's
mind-blowing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was great. I can't wait to go to some of the other, you know, countries there, too, like you said, when things open back up. Japan is also on my list.
Oh, my God. But that must have been incredible, though.
It was. I mean, Singapore, you know, they're known for these hawker stands, so it's just like noodle brothy deliciousness, like right after the next, you know, you just, I was so full when I got home. I was just like, oh my God, I can't eat anymore. But it was so delicious. And Hong Kong also just really inspiring to see how creative people are also working with small spaces, and just simplicity, but freshness and just doing so much with so little, you know. I mean, it doesn't take fancy stoves and pots and pans and, you know, all the stuff all the time.
But to make that kind of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I would say Chinese food is a go-to, especially in the Bay Area. I mean, I ate Chinese food a majority of the time in the Bay Area, and Vietnamese food. It's kind of harder to find great Chinese food in LA. I used to feel like any city, major cities go to, you could find great Chinese food, but that's not true.
Yeah, I would think LA might, but then I think San Francisco has one of the largest Chinatowns, right? In the country. So
San Francisco and Berkeley and Oakland, like they're thriving with Chinese food. I think LA more what has stood out for me is the Korean, far as Asian food, is the Korean food.
Yeah.
Which I didn't used to eat as much in the Bay Area, but have really enjoyed.
But there's some delicious, there are some great spots in LA though, and I think some delicious Korean food. Lately,
and Japanese food. Oh my gosh, Sugarfish is
Sugarfish
so
is that a spot?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm gonna have to write that
down. It's a spot, and I used to before that. I felt like Nobu was like the best sushi I ever had, or Kerala in Berkeley. But then when I went to Sugarfish, it's just, I mean, it tastes, it's only sushi.
Oh,
and but
so
the
focused.
And the rice is warm.
I love that.
And
I don't like cold rice.
Then
like,
I don't either. And I never even thought about it with sushi.
Yeah, it makes a big difference in
so
how you experience the fish. I believe too.
Yes, and the fish literally is so fresh; it tastes sweet.
I love the name too.
And then
fish.
They'll have little and then they'll be. You know, different like ponzu sauce and different that they'll just already pair with it.
Yum. Just,
yeah.
That sounds delicious. Okay, I gotta put that on my list
when
I get back.
Hungry.
I know.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
We've been talking for a minute, and so we've definitely probably built up a little appetite talking about food. But I appreciate your appreciation.
I wish we could have done this in person.
I know. Well, maybe we will in the future. You'll come back when you release your album or something.
For sure.
Yeah. And when you come to see family in the Bay. But again, I'm really thankful. And, you know, we met briefly at the Boys and Girls Club event. I think that was the first time I met you. Yeah, we've crossed paths, but it's nice to get to spend some time and get to know you. So, thank you and continue your cooking. I'm going to continue following you obviously on Instagram and get inspired again. It's fun for me as a chef to see what, you know, other people are doing. Especially, you know, at this time, a lot of people are cooking at home and, it's cool. So, anything else?
Yeah,
you want to share?
it's been really nice. Not that I can think of, not that's coming to mind, but yeah, definitely, I feel like good food has been such a blessing, and I think growing up in California, we just have so much variety.
Yes. Oh, we're spoiled. I didn't grow up here, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, I'm never leaving.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
The access. And I definitely, you know, my heart is going out to people that are struggling and not able to eat good food. I feel like that's really something I just think about daily, because I feel like it's one of the luxuries that even through this, it's like being able to go to the grocery store and just like have all of this abundance, you know.
I agree. I agree. And that's that. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's just so important. And I know you do a lot of work, you know, with human rights, and congratulations on being recognized by the Ella Baker Center for your work, and
thank you
for doing that work, because it's, you know, we all have to be a little bit more gentle with our fellow mankind, right, and more empathetic, and not take for granted what we have. We are so fortunate, many of us.
Yeah.
Well, no one should go without a good meal, and I'm going to continue. I do work with No Kid Hungry because I think, you know, you got to start there. You got to start with the kids for sure.
For sure. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's all. I love it when restaurants and entrepreneurs will pair with because it's got to be hard sometimes to not waste food, right?
Oh, I mean, that's my pet peeve. I can't even stand wasting food. And even at the end of the day at the restaurant, you know, sometimes, I mean, I have, you know, my employees, I take it home to your family, or, you know, we do have people on the streets here, and, you know, I can't do it regularly, but I would rather drive up and give to someone who's living on the street than put in the trash. There's just no way. That's not even in my you know, ethos. Mm-hmm. Well,
for sure. Well, I'm looking forward to coming by and eating some more of your food. And thank you for your presence
in
the Bay Area. And happy almost birthday.
I know. Same to you. I'll be thinking about you. Enjoy. Have a great day, great birthday month. And I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, you too. Take care.
Tanya's Table is a Mudhouse Media production. Original music by Coffee Brown. Music is produced by Coffee Brown and Julie Wolf. Tanya's Table podcast is produced by Brand AOK.
Like what you're hearing? Download and subscribe to all of our shows at mudhousemedia.com.